You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeter. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Steeter.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
Ever get the feeling you've been cheated?
It is Wednesday, November 11th, 2015. My name is Sam Steeter. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, on the campaign trail with Ben Carson, Matt Taibbi will join us on his thoughts of last night's Republican debate. Also on the program today, speaking of that debate, if lies, nonsensical policy pronouncements, and absurdities fall in a GOP forest, is there anyone there to hear it? Is that the way that goes? I don't know. Doesn't matter. Also on the program, how Fox News provided a comfy, safe place for the Republicans to spew their nonsense. And on top of that, geared the debate with a specific agenda. Meanwhile, President Obama's bid to close Guantanamo stymied by the House and the Senate. Veto-proof stymie. Meanwhile, Andrew Cuomo's not-so-impressive raise to state workers in New York. I guess we should be thankful for the little things, but this is a little thing. The bravado, not so little. New report out shows federal workers make up to 35% less than their counterparts in the private sector. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau featured last night in an ad which showed Elizabeth Warren as our dear leader. Oh, if it were so. And death threats on the Missouri campus where we've seen protests this week. One arrest made in that and more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. We'll get to Matt Taibbi will join us in just a moment. But I wanted to talk about that Andrew Cuomo, I think it was yesterday now, was it yesterday or Monday, announced that he was going to, by executive order, raise the pay of all state workers in New York State to at least $15 an hour. Now, that's good. I cannot even contemplate a job that a state worker does that doesn't deserve 15 bucks an hour, or really, frankly, anybody in New York State. But the reality is that most of them were already getting over $15 or $15. 5% of the state workers in New York State get less than $15 an hour. That's 10,000 workers. That's not bad. But they're not going to get it until the end of 2021. So if my math is correct, that's 5 years from now. At least those are people outside of New York City. In New York City, state workers will get $15 an hour by the end of 2018. I am just, it is completely befuddling to me that you could live. Never mind if you have a family. If you have a family, it just seems ridiculous. But it's just impossible for me to imagine that you can live on $15 an hour in New York City. But by 2018, state workers will get there. And again, the rest of the state, 2021. So good for Cuomo, but I think his rousing, if I am correct on this, I heard a rousing speech by him. Fire and brimstone, social justice. And it's not quite that impressive. I mean, it's better than nothing, but it's not quite that impressive. Meanwhile, I've been getting a constant, almost constant text now from my friend who is participating in Movember. I've talked about Movember before. Harry's is the official partner of the Movember Foundation and will be donating money and helping raise awareness for men's health. Now, if you don't know what Movember it is, I guess what it is, you grow a mustache to raise awareness and money for men's health issues. I have expressed that it's unlikely that I will grow a mustache because a myriad of reasons, not the least of which in which how it looks on me. But I have no, I'm not embarrassed by such things. It's really just a question of the intermediate steps may be a little bit problematic for me. But regardless of whether or not you do Movember, you should check out Harry's, which is the official razor partner of Movember. As you know, I don't like to shave that often. I don't like to shave at all, but I don't shave that often. And when I do, with Harry's, I get the best shave I've had ever, frankly. The blades are super sharp. They provide a close, comfortable shave. I like their shaving lotion. Smells good, according to my wife. Harry's was started by two guys who are passionate about creating a better shaving experience by delivering an amazing shave at an affordable price, and it comes directly to your door. So you don't have to go down to the whatever it is and buy the razor in the huge plastic container. And Harry's has an amazing deal. With my code MajorityReport, you can get their starter set for $10. $10. That comes with a razor handle, three blades, and the shaving lotion or cream, or foaming gel, I guess, delivered to your door. Shipping's totally free. Go to harrys.com right now. And if it's your first order, they're going to give you $5 off that order with the code MajorityReport. It's a great deal, even if it's not your first time, for $15. But if it's your first time, they must take a loss on that. I have no idea how they do it. It's harrys.com, harrys.com, code Majority Report. All right, folks, going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Matt Taibbi. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. It is a pleasure to welcome back to the program writer with Rolling Stone magazine, author of multiple best-selling books, and now pounding the campaign trail, Matt Taibbi. Matt, welcome back to the show.
How's it going, Sam?
You tell me, buddy. My understanding is you're out on the campaign trail with Ben Carson. Is that right?
You know what? Actually, I was supposed to go out with Carson last week, and then I ended up just going to New Hampshire and following everybody else instead. So I hit everybody last week. I hit Rubio, Carly, Jeb, Kasich, couple others. It was a long week, definitely.
Did you run into Rudy Giuliani up in New Hampshire? Is he still up there? I feel like he got lost.
No, I didn't actually physically run into Rudy, although I ran into his picture in a bunch of places. But no, didn't see him.
All right. Now, Well, I want to hear a little bit about what's going on the trail, but let's talk a little bit about the debate last night.
Give me your
top line thoughts on this thing. I mean, I was following your Twitter a little bit because we were doing some live coverage here, and my sense was that you were afraid that you were going to be too drunk to make it home last night.
Yeah, well, I actually don't remember a whole lot from the end of that debate. I'll be honest, because we play that drinking game, and they hit pretty much all the rules within the first 20 minutes, so it was. It got ugly quick.
I hope it wasn't regulatory rollback regulations and cut taxes or jam it down my throat. If those three things, I don't know how you weren't sent to the hospital.
No, it was more like, well, Carly got me because we have a rule against saying take your country back or take our government back,
mm-hmm.
And she did that four times. That was four shots right there. So that was bad. But you know, I mean, the top line thoughts from last night. Look, I mean, I think the subtext to this whole campaign right now is everybody's trying to figure out who's going to end up being the real candidate, i.e., the one who gets all the money and backing from the party, and you know that was originally supposed to be Jeb, and now I don't think anybody believes he's really going to be the candidate. So who is it going to be? Rubio is clearly the person everybody's trying to shoehorn into that role, but I think the idea last night was that Rubio and Cruz were jockeying, I think, for that particular distinction. You heard Cruz take a bunch of veiled shots at Rubio, talking about sugar subsidies. So that's what that was all about last night.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? That to me seems completely unreported. Because, you know, as we were watching last night, as soon as he said sugar subsidies, I thought, is he going to take the next step? And it's almost as if he's just sort of like laying this stuff out. Like, you know, it seems to me that Cruz has been very methodical in this way. He's just sort of like setting the building blocks and showing a tremendous amount of patience and just sort of like hovering around Rubio, just saying like, I'm ready to come in for the kill on you.
Absolutely. Yeah, no. And he's playing kind of a double game. He's setting up Rubio on the one hand and he's nuzzling Trump on the other hand, right? Because I think his thinking is that Trump is going to disappear eventually. He's going to take all of Trump's voters, and then, you know, his big issue is going to be how is he going to knock out, you know, Rubio. I'm, you know, this is all inside baseball stuff, but
right.
that's kind of my thinking, right? I don't know if that's yours.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you totally, and I think actually Cruz he's laid a foundation with a lot of those evangelicals. He seems to me the most obvious second choice for them after Carson. And, you know, who knows how durable Carson's support is. I mean, we've got a clip of him on the banking question, which was just sort of stunning to watch this guy devolve into the word salad. For some reason.
Yeah, I saw your tweet on that last night. That was pretty funny.
he doesn't. None of that seems to stick with him on some level. But I think that's because, you know, he's got gifted hands and the Lord shines upon him.
Well, so this that's another storyline of this whole campaign is that this is a new sort of consequence-free environment for these candidates. They, in the old days, when you said something crazy like, you know, Trump saying, you know, John McCain shouldn't have been captured or whatever, that was fatal. You were dead. You know, the reporters would just drive the stake through your heart and you'd be gone. And that's not happening this time around. Now people like Trump and Carson are not only not sinking in the polls, they're kind of staying with that elevated level of support. And so that it's hard to gauge whether it's actually going to hurt him, all that stuff, or whether he's going to stay there.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be a while. I mean, I think that's really more of just like a glimpse of what's to come, right? Because when, you know, if Cruz has the Jesus juice and has it nearly as much as Carson, at one point they're going to go head-to-head on policy, theoretically. But I have to say, last night, what I thought was also amazing is how much sort of interference the Fox Business people ran for specific candidates, right? I mean, you had one question on the TPP to one of the four guys on stage who literally have nothing but an opinion, as opposed to the three guys who actually are going to vote on it, and you don't ask them about it. I mean, that to me was stunning.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, they didn't ask anybody who was going to vote on the TPP any of those questions, and they didn't ask any difficult questions of anybody.
Right.
I mean, you know, you had two exploding scandals going on right now. One involving Marco Rubio, who just this week released his new credit records, right? And not only did the moderators not bring that up, but none of the other candidates brought it up, and none of the other candidates even brought up the Carson pyramid grain silo craziness, none of that stuff. So it was like there was a Nazi-Soviet non-aggression pact going on with this, with that whole setup. It was a gigantic nothing burger of a debate. It was just a bunch of infomercials, I thought.
Yeah, but even on the substance, I mean, you start off by talking to Trump about immigration, fair enough, because that's what he's, you know, sort of controversially known for. But within the context of the Republican Party, Marco Rubio's statements about and actions about immigration have been equally controversial, never addressed with him. I mean, that is his one liability. I mean, you can really see the Fox people working overtime there. It was as if everybody got together and just said, let's just focus on the positives. I mean, it's really sort of very fluffy and comfortable, and everybody was nurtured in a way. And it was, I think that's why John Kasich was so maligned and so it with such strong reaction from the party faithful, because this guy showed up and he was sort of like the he was the downer, man. Like, what?
Yeah. Well, he's depressed, I think, by this whole campaign process. I thought he thought everybody was going to love him a lot more than they do, and he I actually had a scene with him last week in New Hampshire, because I was asking him when he registered to be a candidate in the Secretary of State's office last week. I asked him if you know, he's always complaining about all these people with goofy ideas that are unrealistic, and I said to him, you know, all the people with the goofy ideas are at the top of the polls. Do you think maybe being a sane candidate is disqualifying in this race? And he got very upset, and he's like, no, and he, like, you know, he turned his head. He was very offended by that question. I think he's being a downer because he's upset that nobody's responding to him, I think, is what's going on.
That, to me, you know, the idea that question could hit him in such a way that, like, how could you say that? Or even just, I mean, it seems to me like this is my own projection. Like, if I'm sitting around the Kasich house, this is the only thing that we're talking about. Right. Like, the idea that a reporter would ask me that question would be the first thing I would expect walking out the door. Like, when's somebody going to ask me why it is the lunatics are in first place? That's
right. I was doing him a favor. I mean, you know, in the context of the campaign trail, that was a softball. I was trying to give him an opportunity to talk about how crazy everybody was and how, among other things, the press wasn't doing their jobs by knocking down all these other lunatics who are in the race. And instead, you know, I think he took it as he was being dissed because he was low in the polls, you know. So he's a touchy, unpleasant kind of a guy, I think, is just the end with him.
Yeah, and I wonder if it's also just like sort of just shockingly like midlife crisis level depressing, right? Because you've spent your whole life, you know, if you're John Kasich, you go from Congress to Lehman Brothers or Fox News to Lehman Brothers to the governor of Ohio, and you got to be thinking like, I am on the path. Like, I've hit every single sort of silo, every quadrant of what I need to hit to be the next Republican president. And you come in and, you know, Donald Trump is just stomping on you. And Ben Carson, who looks like he's, you know, you've got it from Kasich's perspective, he's got to be like, just as if it's just a guy walked in off the street is just like stomping on you. It's got to be incredibly depressing. You got to start to like wonder, like, what am I going to do with the rest of my life?
That's right. Yeah, no, he must have thought, I mean, not only or all those things, but it's, he was governor of Ohio, you know, of all states. He's right in the middle of the whole Electoral College map, and, you know, he's got all the credentials we talked about. He's a basically remorseless, mean-spirited, you know, kind of a jerky guy that's just perfect to be a Republican Party nominee. He's got that age-advanced Kevin Costner-looking thing, too, as well. And he probably thought that he was going to be a shoo-in for the nomination, and he's way at the edge of this debate and not getting any closer, and I don't know. I can see exactly what you mean, him looking at Ben Carson and Trump and thinking how outrageous this is.
We have a clip. I mean, there's no sound to it. We'll probably play it later in the program of Rubio apparently at the break walking up to Jeb Bush and clearly making some type of overture, and Bush clearly saying no, and Rubio just spins on his heels and walks
wow.
back to Trump. I mean, it's really, I mean, Jeb Bush, I think, is in a similar situation. I mean, give me your sense of where Bush is at. Have you seen him up in New Hampshire?
I did, yeah. Yeah, I saw him in an event in Hollis, New Hampshire last week, and he was bad. You know, it's funny. He doesn't come across as a terrible human being in person, and he seems kind of reasonable, and he does his homework. He knows what he's talking about when he talks about issues, but there's no drive with him. You don't really understand why he's running for president. He just has no sense of the moment. He had a terrible exchange with a local pharmacist that was hosting the event that I went to, where they were basically asking him to say something really, really nasty about drug dealers, because this guy had this proposal to basically classify drug dealers as child molesters. It was crazy. Instead, Jeb launched into this whole thing about how pharmacies were over were too liberally giving out prescriptions, and this is to a pharmacist. And so he just doesn't have a sense of how to go for the jugular and be a candidate. And I don't know, he missed lots and lots of opportunities last night too, it seemed to me.
I mean, I think my sense with Jeb is that he's now beginning to wind things up. Like, he is now, like, what I think Kasich did last night, it seems to me, is said, I if I'm going to win this, I'm going to win this on my terms. And I think Kasich is just so sort of arrogant as to think that he actually could. And I get the feeling that Jeb, in his own low energy way, as Trump would say, is starting to do the same thing, like to come out on that immigration so strongly. He didn't have to speak then. He just sort of volunteered it. And it seems to me that he's basically trying to reset, get back to where he started the campaign, because I don't know. This is my own pet theory about Jeb Bush, but I think part of the reason why he entered this race was to basically introduce George P., his son, down in Texas, to, you know, the sort of the Bush network across the country, right? To keep the family thing going. And now the guy, poor Jeb, is actually looking at this prospect of having tainted the Bush name more than George. And like, you know, because it's not hard to imagine that in 10 years from now, if George P. is running for something, the first thing everybody's going to say, like, well, Jeb proved that the Bush name is just a horrible sort of, you know, burning tire around your neck. And I think he's going to try and get to the point where he goes out with some measure of respect,
right,
if it's possible. I mean, if it's possible. And the only way you get that is if he goes out by saying, like, look, the Republican Party has moved away from these things, and I know that it'll come back, you know, in years to come or something.
Yeah, I mean that makes sense, but I don't know how he achieves that at this point. First of all, he can't really drop out, because they dropped $103 million just on his PAC, right? So the people who backed him are going to expect him to stay in this thing for the long haul, and he probably can, right? He's probably got an organization, and his name will keep him in the 5 to 10% range, probably, in all these primaries. So he's probably stuck running and losing for, you know, in this race all the way to the end. But I don't know how he salvages any kind of any dignity out of this whole thing, because they're going to turn him into a laughingstock, I think.
It's almost like being a reporter covering the campaign trail.
Right. Yeah, exactly. There's no escape.
You have to go there. It's almost like it's his job now.
That's really funny. For a Jeb Bush event, nobody wants to be there. Not the reporters, not the candidates, nobody. Yeah.
What is Carly Fiorina like on the trail?
So I went to an event with her in this kind of really remote part of New Hampshire, and it was in this little meeting hall, and there was this huge ventilation tube over Carly's head that was spewing something the entire time, and so nobody could hear what she was saying. But I've seen her, you know, versions of her stump speech enough that I could tell when she was going to her normal lines about, you know, the 73,000 page tax code and all that. But she's not very good in person. She's trying to do the same thing that Rubio does, which is sell voters basically on her inspirational personal tale of advancement through the corporate world. But it's just not as good of a story as Rubio's or even Cruz's, for that matter. And she doesn't know how to work a room very well. And she also continually says things that are not true, and reporters keep calling her on it. And I think she's going to get herself in trouble, like that thing last night about the green room. She said just the opposite a month ago about that she did meet Putin in a green room. So
we had that on tape. What do you think what's behind that? I mean, it's not like she said this like, oh, I had told somebody I shouldn't say this because I had just told, you know, my hairstylist or, you know, the driver that I had met Putin in a green room. But she said it on national television. Right. I mean, it's not like this is a hard thing to find.
Well, I think what she's grasping again is this new dynamic of it no longer being damaging to say untrue things or wrong things or crazy things in the race. Carly Fiorina, frankly, she was at Nowheresville in this race until that first debate performance, really, where she said that whole crazy thing about watching a video of people harvesting fetal brains, which turned out not to be true. There is no such video. But it lingered in the news for two or three days. And even though she got called on it by PolitiFact and all those sites, it gave her a huge bump. And she rode that bump for, you know, a good two or three weeks.
But you're not suggesting...
So there was no consequence for it.
You're not suggesting that she planned to lie that, right? I mean, that lie just came out of her mouth as a retort to Trump, and it didn't seem to like there was.
I think it's like just pathological. Reflexive with her, though. I mean, for instance, last night when they first went to her and asked her a question that involved the tax code, she avoided the line about the 73,000 page tax code because she's been busted about that so many times. But later on in the event, when she was just free associating, she went back to it again because she just can't help herself. And she does that over and over and over again. She's got all these figures in her head that she loves. And even though they're not accurate, she just keeps hitting them. It's really strange.
We had a conversation last night. We're quite convinced that she would be the most likely to leave a hit and run scene. But only after checking to make sure that she didn't have any damage on her car.
I don't know. There's a lot of candidates for that one. That's a really interesting one. I'm going to have a Twitter discussion about that. I might vote for Rubio in that one, but, you know, it's tough.
Have you seen him on the campaign trail? I mean, how?
I have. Yeah.
Give me your thoughts about him because, you know.
He's a pro.
All right, go ahead.
Yeah, he's a pro. He's definitely whether you agree with him or not about anything, and I don't. I mean, I don't really like any of these people politically, but compared to the rest of them, in terms of just the job of being a politician and knowing how to work a room and give a speech, I don't think there's anybody else in the race who's really even in Rubio's league. He's really, really good at it. He is dynamic. He's young. He's good looking. I heard girls oogling over him at the event that I went to in New Hampshire. And he really
it's Slim Pickens. To be fair, it's Slim Pickens up in New Hampshire.
That's true.
Spent some time up there.
People, Jeb Bush compared him to Republican Obama, and I know that neither Democrats nor Rubio will like that, but there's a little bit of that to it. He has a stump speech that's based around a vague personal story, and he really strongly emphasizes a lot of his, you know, personal qualities, his youth, his vigor, his energy. I think that's probably what's going to carry the day. He knows how to light up a room.
Interesting. Now who else do you have to cover going forward? I'm just curious.
I haven't done Cruz yet in person, so I'm going to have to do, and actually I haven't done Carson in person either. So I'm interested to do that. But frankly, I still think that Donald Trump is going to end up maybe winning this nomination. So I want to do another story about that, because I still think that this whole phenomenon of him having such a major chunk of the Republican electorate is a big story. I mean,
yes.
Because it's really a story about race and, you know, this new phenomenon in the Republican Party of this sort of overt dark racial politics, and if he hangs around for that long, it's a really interesting and disturbing phenomenon.
Do you think he wants to be president?
You know, I don't know. That's a really interesting question, because I don't think he thought that this was going to happen. and now that it is, among other things, he seems to like the kind of guy who is a little bit lazy. And he's been pampered his entire life, and running for president is hard work. You have to be in top physical shape to do it, and you have to be absolutely dedicated. That's why it weeds out a lot of people who just can't handle the routine of it. And
my understanding
grueling.
Is that being president is also a difficult job.
Right, of course. If you actually do it like Jimmy Carter, right? I mean, you would never sleep at all. Running is really hard, and he hasn't even gotten to the hard part yet. I mean, if he becomes a nominee,
right,
then you're talking about plane flights. You're talking about 7-8 stops a day, nonstop fundraising sessions. And I don't know if that's who Donald Trump is. I don't think he could do that. So it'll be interesting if that's where this goes. He probably thought that this was just going to be a nice little bump for his personal businesses,
right,
and kind of a fun thing to do, like a frat gag. And instead, he sort of accidentally becomes the front runner. And what do? Drop out? I mean, he can't. Right?
Well, I have funny. A theory on that one, too. I think at one point he's going to announce that someone in his family has a disease, and he's not going to say who it is or what the disease is, but it could be fatal. And he can't run because he can't give 180% to the American public, which is what his plan was. And so he's got to drop out, and he just becomes like the chairman of the Ted Cruz campaign or something.
Wow. You think that's going to happen, huh?
I mean, I just don't see how Trump wants to be president. It's one thing for him to want to name the president, right? But to actually have the job just seems to me to be like, why? You know, he's not that guy. That his quality of life is going to diminish significantly.
Yeah, no, exactly.
And as much of an ego as he has, I feel like it can be satiated if he gets to tell himself for the rest of his life, I'm the one who put that guy in office, or I'm the one who gave the nomination. Because right now he's walking around saying to himself, I'm the guy who destroyed Jeb Bush. And I think that's 100% true. Jeb Bush is a horrible candidate, but nevertheless, Jeb Bush's entire game plan was completely destroyed when Trump took him and just sort of slapped him around in front of the American public, and Jeb never recovered from that.
Yeah, no, but when Trump went after Jeb's wife.
Yes,
and,
we still talk about that in the office. He basically says, like, you know, I spent some time with your wife. She's a very nice woman. And while you were at some convention or something. I mean, it really did sound like that.
Yeah, no, it was really dark. And Jeb, not only he didn't respond, he had like some aide issue a statement like 5 days later. I mean, there's only one way to handle that situation is you have to go find Trump and belt him, right?
Right.
I mean, I think his campaign was dead at that moment. I totally agree with you.
But I guess time will tell.
Time will tell.
Do you expect anything really to change in the dynamic of this race going forward? I mean, it seems to me that it the only difference is, like, you know, how much time does John Kasich have left? How much more does he want to deal with this?
So to me, the whole thing is math, right? Because Trump wins the nomination if enough other people stay in the race. And he stays in the race, right? So he has an absolute floor. There's no way he's sinking below 20%, say, or you know, 21%. So if there's three or four other real candidates in the race, and that continues, you know, well into March and April, then he's going to win the nomination. So this is all about whether they can pare the field down to one or two people to take on Trump and Carson, and, you know, carve out enough of an opposition to the lunatic vote, because otherwise, you know, the evangelical crazies backing Carson, and then you have the racist crazies backing Trump, and they're not moving anywhere. They're not going to just go and march over to the establishment candidate because they're told to. I don't know. I'm interested to hear what you think about this. I think it's a waiting game to see who they're going to hand the ball to take on those people.
Right. I mean, but I don't know who it is that they could. I mean, I guess it's like Cruz and Rubio, but I don't see one of them standing down, frankly. And,
no, I don't either.
I mean, this is Rubio's last chance, right? Because, you know, after this, he's no longer in the Senate. He's, you know, he could come back, I guess, 4 years from now and try and take on the Democratic president, you know, if it's Hillary or Bernie or whomever. But I mean, I think he's basically done in his mind. He's like, I got to go for broke here. And I think Ted Cruz is like, why would I step out? I mean, Ted Cruz could take this all the way to the convention. He's still a sitting senator. Anything that he gains along the way, he can't lose anything at this point because he's apparently universally hated. And I think the only thing that can really sort of like break up this logjam is that, you know, somebody finds Ben Carson's psychology report and he drops down to like the teens or something. And Donald Trump says, you know, holy crap, I've already got a jet. Why do I want to be president? You know, and decides like, all right, I'm going to throw this to somebody and I'm going to have my own room at the White House or something.
Wouldn't that be the funniest thing in the world, though, if Trump became the first person to drop out because he realized that he didn't really want to be president? I mean, there are other people who've decided they didn't want to be president. I mean, LBJ obviously was already president and decided he didn't want to go through it again. But this would be absolutely unique for somebody
But
Perot run as a lark and then drop out. It'd just be so funny. I don't know.
I mean, Ross Perot, there was a little bit of this, right? I mean,
a little bit, yeah.
I mean, when he dropped out the first time, it was because, I mean, according to Ed Rollins and the others, is like he was not enjoying it. Like it was getting too much of a slog. And it wasn't clear that he could win any more than it's clear that Trump can win, even if he gets the nomination. But Perot, you know, he was pulling in. He ended up pulling in still like in the teens. And that's after he dropped out and got back in. Who knows how much he would have had he stayed in? I mean, you know, Clinton only won with 45% of the vote. You know, Perot, I think, was a perfect example. He wasn't quite as footloose and fancy free as Trump, which only sort of like speaks to why this would be more of a drag for him than it was for Perot.
I mean, running for president would be a drag for anybody, unless you're like a pathological narcissist to a degree that you need literally nonstop attention. And there are a lot of people like that who run for president.
And also do stand-up comedy and act.
Right.
I mean, there's plenty of those people to go. I mean, George Pataki's running for president simply, I think, to have something to do. And I'm not kidding. I really just think he's like sitting around going like, what am I going to do now? I don't know. I'll run for president. Maybe then I'll get a gig somewhere. I mean, that was
rake leaves, run for president.
Right. That was the talk about Pataki 2 years ago, 3 years ago. I mean, when I was like, you know, doing Dylan Radigan's program, he would come over and people were just like, all he does is walk back and forth on Sixth Avenue in New York between Fox and MSNBC, hoping somebody will offer him a job.
And then he just decided, you know, people are like, he's talking about running for president. And everybody's like, really? And he's like, he doesn't have anything else to do.
Right, right. Well, I mean, it is, I guess, you know, it's like a hobby, I guess, if you, it would take up a whole, you know, 6 months for somebody
I get to, let me ask you this. When you were with Ben, well, I guess you don't know yet, but I mean, I get Ben Carson's, I'm somehow on his distribution list, and I get his campaign events. It doesn't look that rigorous to me. I mean, he does like one or two a day, maybe, and or maybe every other day. He flies around the country. I mean, it's like a hard book tour, I guess.
Right. Well, there's two different schools of thought, and I've actually talked to campaign aides about this stage of the race. There are some people who think that this is the time that you just have to absolutely be knocking down all the doors. This is the sort of the Rick Santorum school of campaigning, which is that you do absolutely as many events as possible. And you know, he won Iowa last time,
right?
So that it does work. And then the other one is just, you know, you can take it easy. New Hampshire's a small state. You can do one or two events and not have to drive very far, and you don't have to go very far from Manchester. You get in with the local media, and you can win the primary that way too. So it might be that he's just, you know, not a very high energy guy, or it might be that he just is he's winning anyway.
Right.
So,
I don't blame him. I mean, but I'm saying in terms of whether or not it's a bad life. I mean, this guy's just going, it seems to me, from mega church to mega church,
right.
Stopping off to meet, you know, wealthy donors. And, you know, he delivers a speech that, you know, I mean, we've seen what he does on national television. I mean, God knows what he's saying in these churches. I mean, in terms of like, he could be saying anything, right? I mean,
right.
Like literally
yeah.
The first thing that comes, I saw when I walked in here, I saw, you know, lint on the carpet and I thought God's with us everywhere. And everybody just like applauds and goes, he's amazing.
Have you read his book, by the way?
I have not, sadly. Is that basically what it is?
Yeah. No, it's a lot of the whole, you know, seeing the face of Jesus in every tree stump kind of a thing. Definitely in the beginning too, especially. You know, there are great sections in there. Like there's a scene where he's bummed out that he doesn't have any money at school, so he prays to God, and then he, like, 2 minutes later, he sees a $10 bill on the ground.
That's part of the psychology test, too, right?
right. Yeah, exactly.
He got 10 bucks. He prayed to God, and he found a crumpled-up $10 bill on the ground, and then he found out about the psychology test, and he got $10 from the professor for being the only honest person in the class.
That's right.
It all turned out to be
right.
A massive hoax that he has not either grappled with or in some way or refuses to sort of, I guess, see.
Right. But again, this, I think this is a new paradigm of this particular race, is that nobody cares. The people who vote for Ben Carson,
they don't,
care that he's crazy and that you know, his background is, among other things, if you've been in, you know, that kind of evangelical environment, the whole idea of having a testimony that is a little bit exaggerated, that's totally normal. And I think they probably even like that about his story, is that he exaggerates how bad things were before he found God, and you know, these little mystical burning bush type stories too. I mean, they're not really meant to be taken literally. So it's odd, definitely.
It's an amazing, I mean, I would say it's an amazing turn of events, but I think, like, you know, if you track McCain picking Sarah Palin and why he felt he had to do that, and then Mitt Romney and why he felt like he could never tack back to the center, even in the general election. Like, this is the next step, right? Where it's the guys who either associate themselves with someone who's crazy to appeal to the crazies, or the moderate who pretends he's a crazy to appeal to the crazies, to then the next step is the crazy. Who is one of them, and he doesn't have to pretend.
Right, and Trump just blew that door wide open, right, because he has no connection to the party at all, and he just changed the entire complexion of how campaigns work now on that side. So it's fascinating, definitely.
Let me ask you one more question. I know you don't, my guess is there's not, you're not spending a lot of time with the sort of the Politico reporters person. I don't want to, maybe you are.
No, not too much.
I didn't gather that. But I run into one occasionally or two, and I wonder, they Do you think there's like an awareness? Because to me, the story is not so much about Trump. All the things came together with Trump, but he's just basically the real Republican who is unfettered by all the sort of checks and balances that are necessary to sort of make them seem not so crazy. Do you get the sense that there is a growing awareness or that really the problem is not so much Trump, but the problem is the Republican Party?
Well, I think the media is, there are a lot of people in our business who are really in denial about what's going on. If you listen to the talk, I mean, I do listen to the way reporters talk about this, and a lot of them are doing the same things that we're doing right now. They were basically dismissing the idea that in the end it's going to be Carson or Trump and that some quote-unquote real candidate is going to emerge. And that is a point of view that comes from a place where you're out of touch with the people out there who are supporting the Trumps and the Carsons, because to those people, Trump and Carson are real candidates, you know. And I think what you're right. talking about, this whole craziness that's been developing, you know, for a long time, and Sarah Palin was really one of the first, you know, evidences of that. That you're right, that is totally the story now. There's this whole gigantic, it's over half the electorate on that side. This huge pool of people who are nuts, you know, and they don't care, you know, whether or not the person has any kind of ability to be an actual politician, and they're not impressed by the, you know, the skills at working a room the way, you know, like I'm impressed by Rubio just as a politician. They're not impressed by that. They're off on some other plane, and I think the media has been slow to realize that that's going on, that this is this transformation out there. Yeah, you're right.
I hope they figure it out soon. We shall see. Matt Taibbi, always a pleasure. Thanks, man. I appreciate your
Thanks,
hanging
Sam.
On this one.
We'll talk
to you soon. Okay, bye-bye. All right, folks. That was very nice of Taibbi. I know he was sort of hungover and did not anticipate him being on that long. I thought we were going to do a teaser Tuesday, and it turns out to be a wowzer Wednesday. I couldn't come up with a W. I couldn't.
Okay. Moving on.
A larger than normal Wednesday. All right, folks. We're going to take a quick break and head into the fun half. And during the fun half, ladies and gentlemen.
My debate was great. I thought I nailed it.
We're going to play a couple. I'm going to break down some of the biggest whoppers that we heard in the Republican Party in the debate last night. There's no correcting these zombie lies in the Republican Party, but it's important for you, particularly as we are only a couple of weeks away from Thanksgiving. And when you get back there, your dad or your uncle or your mom or your brother-in-law or your cousin or your sister, maybe, will be like, I heard, you know, Marco Rubio say this, or I heard Donald Trump say this. And so you will have the opportunity to say, well, here's the reality of it. And then you let the food fight begin. We will get
through that too.
Oh yeah.
Really to have a
Well, no. Janine is coming in.
It's important.
Janine's coming in. It's not going to happen on the day of Thanksgiving. Sadly, we could not time it that way because she's got other things to do. But I figure, you know what? People are, as long as it's within close proximity to Thanksgiving, yeah. still effective. Janine will help us be a little bit more diplomatic. Because, you know, Janine is very diplomatic.
Yeah, Janine's deeply diplomatic.
Oh, very diplomatic when she, you know. So
Sam is smug and Janine's like, oh, well, your uncle's just actually a fascistic sociopath.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So don't
I'm
even bother. Actually, ironically, she would say don't bother being smug to him because he's
right.
just a bad human
right.
being.
Right. That's where we definitely.
That you shouldn't engage
right.
with
exactly.
to begin with. Oh, right.
I
right.
will
That's how it
approach
works.
It with smugness and yeah. she will say, why are you wasting your time?
Right. Right. That's how it goes.
But either way, we can talk in the fun half. The number is 646-257-3920. A reminder, folks, this show can't exist without you. It does not exist without our members, period. I'm not talking about the second half. I'm talking about the first half of the show. That is our business model because, you know, we have ads, but, you know, we don't have 400,000 people listening to our show on a daily basis. So you do the math. And
no.
So it is your support that keeps the show alive. You can become a member today by going to jointhemajorityreport.com. And to say thank you, we give you a second half that is generally a funner, lighter. And, you know, maybe there's some days like, I don't want to hear this interview on the intricacies of Social Security disability insurance. Now, it's almost impossible for me to imagine anybody saying that to themselves. I don't have that. I don't have that level of imagination. I suppose. Right. Well, that's the thing. I mean, that's why we have these interviews. I can't imagine people not being, but I am aware that there are people who could say like, yeah, I'm not in the mood. This is a little dry for me today. I'm going to go right to the fun half and just listen to how stupid the Republicans are. What has Pat Robertson said? Or or this other story or whatever it is. So that's why we give it to you. It's a bonus there for our members. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. What could be better? You can get the Majority Report blend. And if you buy crap from Amazon, the least you can do is to make sure that Jeff Bezos makes a little bit less, just a little bit less money, because every time you buy your Amazon crap through our link at majoritireportkickback.com, we get a kickback. So you go there, you click on the Amazon link, you use that as your Amazon portal all the time. You'll notice no difference, but we get a kickback, thus majoritireportkickback.com. All right, number 646-257-3920, or you can IM me via the app. We're going to try and figure out a way of making it members getting priority, sort of like that coast-to-coast thing. You call them from east of the Mississippi, west of the Mississippi, the Wildcat line. All right, we'll be right back after this.